Start doing the melody again.
Get your healing waters quick and get them while you can. I heard if you get there, oh, too late, they'll hit you on the hand. With a 5-gallon bottle, it's a mere weapon, a horrible thing to see. Oh, we need more money for healing waters ministry so their volunteers don't die. Down in the DDR, we heard from one 4 times that he needed a car to get away from those angry lines of people that waited 2 more hours than everyone else and left with not a drink, not even a drip.
Healing water.
That's still just as disgusting.
There it is, the Healing Waters jingle.
It's more than a jingle, man. It's a movement.
It's the
rock opera.
It's the liquid truth right there.
Liquid truth. That's the name.
We're going to spray
this.
A little liquid truth on you guys right now.
This sequence is
That's just as disgusting as the noise he was just making to. All right.
Do a completely different genre.
It's very. I like the liquid truth. Let's do something with the liquid truth.
All right.
I got a story for you about the liquid truth. What do you got to say, my man, about the liquid truth? Tell me now what your water was like then and how it is now.
I've got the liquid truth, yeah. I've got the liquid truth for you.
Tell me
Sit
now.
Down, children. Let me spray you with the liquid truth.
Truth.
Healing Waters International.
You can find us Babbling Brooks in Evergreen, Colorado.
That's right.
Bottled at the source.
That's nice. Thank you.
For those of you that thought you were tuning into God Stories,
it's the Liquid Truth Sessions.
Well, greetings, everybody. My name is Brian Mott, and we're here again with some guests in the studio that we'll get back to in a little bit. But we're here again for another session of God Stories. I'm with Tom Larson, the founder and president of Healing Waters International. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Brian.
You ready for these guys?
I don't know about that. I'm kind of questioning my decision to invite special guests into the studio this time.
Why don't you introduce them while they're still here?
Well, we just got back from a really fun trip to the DR. I took with me a group of 4 musicians and 2 journalists and some other Healing Waters groupies. And the musicians that we've got in the studio with us today are Brad Corrigan, a.k.a. Bradigan, who used to be part of the band Dispatch. Dispatch is one of the largest independent bands ever. I know you never signed with a major label, right, Brad?
Mm-mm.
But at your farewell concert, how many people showed up?
We had over 100,000 people.
Where was that?
It was in Boston a couple of years ago.
At a park in Boston. So Brad was on the trip with me last week to the Dominican Republic. And also in the studio today is Paul Leon Ramsey, a.k.a. Reverend Leon of Reverend Leon's Revival, who Reverend Leon's Revival played at our Christmas benefit concert in December and rocked the house with their brand of, what do you call it, Paul? R&B, gospel, Billy Graham meets James Brown kind of shtick.
It's good enough. I'll take it.
But and along with us, who will have joining us on the phone later in the program, is Richie Fure, who was also on the trip. Richie was one of the founding members of Buffalo Springfield and Poco. The only one in our group down in the Dominican Republic who's actually a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't think either of you guys are yet.
No,
are you?
I have a little one at my house.
Yeah. Mine's still pending.
Not really recognized or sanctioned by anybody else.
And we had one more musician who was with us named Brett Larson, who kind of is a kind of gospel, folky, Woody Guthrie, Johnny Cash kind of guy who's just a great songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And happens to be my cousin. And he had come along to see the water system that his church in St. Paul sponsored a couple of years ago, House of Mercy Church in St. Paul. And then also with us was Jason Boyett, a writer for Relevant Magazine, and Dean Nelson, who's a journalist and professor of journalism at Point Loma Nazarene University, we had just a blast, just a great time together. But anyway, we'll hear more from Paul and Brad and Richie later on. But first of all, we want to just talk about some other stuff.
Thanks for joining us, fellas. We'll look forward to hearing a lot more from you a little bit later. Tom, it sounds like there's been a lot going on. So I'll just ask you for our traditional update.
Well, we kind of miss, we're supposed to be doing these audio updates quarterly, and we've just fallen behind on that. So it had been 6 months since our last one, and you're right, a lot has happened in that last 6 months. In September, we launched our pilot project in Kenya, and that was in partnership with another ministry called Community Uplift Ministries and or Circle of Light. They go by both names. That does electricity projects in rural Kenya. And we partnered with them and did a well, dug a borehole, and then we're purifying the water with chlorine and running it through a carbon filter in a rural part of Africa. And it's a completely different model for us. It's a departure from what we've been doing in Latin America, and it's kind of off to a slow start. We're not sure exactly how that's going to work yet, but we did it as a learning experience to really find out if we can apply our model to a more rural, sparsely populated setting. But the launch of that project went really well. I think we've got 119 households signed up to participate in that program. So we're just going to wait and see what happens with that.
Interesting little factoid, Tom, that we heard just this morning. I heard for the first time this morning. How many average number of members per household is kind of an interesting...
Well, Circle of Light estimates that in that part of Kenya, in the communities they're working with, they estimate 9 people in each household.
Okay. So that the early returns in that community are roughly 1,000 people that are being served by that water system.
With 119 households, yeah. But what we haven't seen yet is a lot of water being distributed through that project. So even though we've got 119 households, so far they're not consuming a lot of water. So we don't know, are they just using it for special occasions or is it too far for them to walk? I mean, we need to ask a lot of questions to really get to the bottom of why we're not distributing more water and how do we get more people involved there.
So Kenya really continues to be an ongoing research effort for us, is one way to think about this.
Exactly. I mean, we know that we have a model that works well in urban areas or large rural communities where there's an infrastructure in place and we're basically treating contaminated tap water. But if we're really going to work all over the world, we would like to have a model that would also work in a more rural application. So we've done this as a pilot project to see if we can create a self-sustaining, financially self-sustaining model that creates guaranteed purified water where we sterilize containers so we can be sure that the containers the water is going into are clean, and make all that, you know, financially self-sustaining. That's what this pilot project is all about.
And then this last December, I had the chance to join you in Guatemala.
Yeah, and wasn't that a great trip?
Boy, I'll come back to that in a minute. I do want to share with the listeners a little bit about my experience there, but tell us about that.
Well, we shared in our last update back in July that we launched the Guatemala program in partnership with Compassion International, and some of the representatives of Compassion were there with us for the launch of that first project in December. And it was just fantastic. I couldn't have envisioned it going any better than it went. I'm just so impressed with our staff down in Guatemala. As you know, Horacio and Nicole Morales are kind of heading up the country startup program there for us. They've already been working to build a Guatemalan staff of local Guatemalan people to work for us and eventually take over the Guatemalan operation. Our hope is that within a year or, you know, who knows exactly how long it'll take, but our plan is to eventually turn it over and have the organization there run by Guatemalans 100%. So we launched that project, and it's off to a really good start. Our plan is to build 10 projects in Guatemala in 2006 and to keep building 10 projects a year there indefinitely. Guatemala looks much like the Dominican Republic or the part of Mexico where we're at. There's high population density. We're working in and around Guatemala City, and the whole environment is much more similar to what we're doing in the DR. So we're very confident that we're going to be able to have a very successful, robust program there.
you know, Tom, from my perspective, I had the chance to see one of the early launches in the Dominican Republic. And so it was very exciting for me to see how the program and the systems and the procedures have evolved in really a short period of time. I guess it's been a couple years now since that first one was launched in the DR. And just to see some of the things that have matured and how they've matured, and just the thrill of seeing that launch in Guatemala was tremendous for me.
We've come a long way, haven't we?
Yeah, we really have. I mean, there's a couple stories that I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'd like to relate a little bit.
Yeah, please.
One of them was at that early launch in the Dominican Republic some months ago. I vividly remember you discussing, I believe it was with Aaron Walling, the issue associated with some of the containers that the local folks were bringing to the church for water.
Old buckets and oil cans.
A little bit of everything, but certainly not clean containers. And the whole notion of, wow, you know, we got to address this issue. And very quickly, a sketch emerged of a bottle washing system. Yeah. And it I don't know that it was the back of a napkin, but it sure, my memory is it was that sort of ad hoc. And sure enough, here a couple years later, that exact bottle washing system appeared in nice stainless steel at the distribution point, and it worked wonderfully.
And since that point, we now include a bottle washing station in every project we build. We recognized early on we didn't have it as part of our solution early on, but early on we recognized the importance of that. And so now, whenever anyone brings a container to the church to buy affordable water, we rinse out their container with chlorinated water first and make sure that it's sterilized.
A lot of things struck me about that trip. You know, the thrill of participating, observing the launch, and another another community receiving that water system. But for me personally, Tom, as you know, I've shared with you a couple times now, having my 14-year-old son along with me, Russell, was really a wonderful experience for me, and I think for him as well. And if I could just share one particular experience, we were...
The dump.
We were with the folks from Compassion that day, and we're visiting with the local church folks, and we ended up walking around the community, and there was a vista that we all ended up taking in that overlooked this dump area. And it, for the benefit of the listeners, this dump was, well, I don't know, 200-300 acres.
I've never seen a dump that big.
It was large, and it was in a very large ravine. And this community, very poor. Many were making their living, so to speak, from the dump. The men would go down early in the day, and they would wait for the dump trucks to come in and jostle for position around the dump trucks so that they would get the best of the best coming out of the dump trucks. And in and amongst that scene were a number of young boys playing soccer or football. Mm-hmm. And just the whole dynamic of that vista and the view, my son was standing beside me, Russell, and just trying to take it all in as we all were. And I think we were all, frankly, very just really struggling with how to process what we were seeing there. And I think my son in particular was impacted. He just walked away at one point, and I went and kind of tracked him down, chased him down a bit, and we had a tremendous conversation. It was one of those moments I'll never forget with my son. He was very moved, and as was I. And I think later that same day, into the evening, a number of us stayed up late and were just mm-hmm. trying to put to words what we had seen that mm-hmm. day. And what was the ministry, Tom, nearby that ministered to the families, particularly the young children?
It's called Potter's House.
Yeah, Potter's House. That really struck me that a number of the children of the families that lived in and around this dump area were thought of by the greater community, the larger community, as trash, as you might suspect, being associated with a dump. And Potter's House made a point of saying, no, they're not trash, they're treasures. Yeah. They're God's treasures. And that just that really struck both Russell and myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for me, that was a very emotional experience as well, and it came right on the heels of visiting the community of Landivar, which is going to be the site of our next water project, or I think our third water project that we're planning to launch in April. And Landivar is right on it's a community real close to the dump, but we went and visited that project, and then the walk that we took, Brian, through the slum, you know, just a couple blocks away from the church, that really, really had a impact on me. You know, I'm going on trips to visit our projects on a regular basis. If not every month, you know, at least every other month, I'm in the field visiting our projects. And, you know, it's really hard not to become just kind of numb and desensitized to what you're seeing. And walking around that that slum in Landivar, just really, it was like a slap in the face to me. It had been probably over a year without me being really, really impacted by what I was seeing. And the poverty there was just so in your face. And I mean, two-story tin shacks. I'd never seen that before, but people were just piecing together these very primitive structures out of just corrugated tin and whatever scrap wood they can find. And just, I mean, the density of people living in that small area and the conditions that they were living in just really shocked me. And I was really disturbed by that. And then to go to the dump after that and look down into that ravine at the people just, you know, scavenging for food and things they could sell in the dump was a very powerful experience. And it brought me back to why we're doing this in the first place. You know, it's so easy to just get caught up in the logistics and the infrastructure and everything, the fundraising and everything that's required to do this work that we're doing, that you kind of, it's real easy to lose sight of, you know, the people that we're ultimately trying to serve and the way they live. And that was a very, very moving experience for me.
Tom, there's nothing like seeing it firsthand. And I've said this to a number of my friends, and I'd like to say it again to those that are listening, that if you get the opportunity, please join us on one of these trips. It is one of the more impactful things I think you'll do. And if you have the chance to do it with your families, in my case, with my younger children, it has just been a tremendous thing for us to do together as a family. And I would encourage everybody to consider that.
Yeah, absolutely. We love taking people down because, like, my eyes were opened, you know, and it certainly wasn't the first time I had seen it. You come back changed. You can't come back the same, and you come back and there's something in your heart that wants to do more. And so we love people going on trips with us because we've seen it happen over and over again that you come back and you're a different person and you see things differently. And oftentimes people go on a trip with us and they come back fired up. They want to do more to help us further the cause. And yeah, so we love it when people go along with us. So the Guatemala project was launched in December, which brought us up to, we finished the year with 39 projects in 4 countries, and counting our December statistics, all of which aren't in yet, but we know that we've distributed more than 20 million gallons of pure drinking water in less than 4 years since we started this.
Mm, tremendous. Tom, let's move on to your most recent trip to the Dominican Republic. Actually, you just got back a few days ago.
Early Monday morning. Yeah,
early Monday. You caught up on your sleep?
4 days ago. I'm doing all right.
All right. Well, tell us how that trip came together. That was an interesting one.
We had, in December, we had a Healing Waters benefit concert, which was our third annual, even though we didn't do it the second year. But we did one 2 years ago, and it was organized by a guy named Rob Marshall, who has a concert and events company called Road Home Productions. He's a concert promoter. And he put together the first annual Healing Waters benefit concert, Christmas concert, 2 years ago without even knowing us. He just knew Herb and Beth Allison, who had just gone to work for us in the Dominican Republic. And Rob heard about Healing Waters through them and wanted to throw together this concert. So at the concert 2 years ago, I met Brad again for the first time, and he played. And I was blown away by his music, and I knew nothing about Dispatch at the time, but then started looking into that and realizing, wow, that guy, he's a pretty humble guy, but man, he's kind of a rock star. And Brad did a concert shortly after that at Harvard University? Mm-hmm. At Harvard out in the East Coast, and he called me up and said, hey, would you mind if I hand out some Healing Waters material at the concert, and maybe we can raise some money for you guys? And I'm like, would I mind? No, that would be great. So Brad was actually the first artist to ever kind of take it upon himself to do some fundraising on our behalf. And ever since then, I'd been very excited to get Brad on a trip. And then at the last Christmas concert we did just in December. Like I said, Reverend Leon was one of the acts that was there, and I got to meet Paul there, and talking to Paul before the concert and telling him about what we were doing, I just got excited about the idea of him going along with us, so I invited him to go. And then I threw out the invitation to Richie Furé also and invited him to go on this January trip. So it came together like that. I was already talking with Jason Boyett from Relevant Magazine about going on the trip, and then Dean Nelson from Point Loma University had written an article about us in Christianity Today a couple of years ago, and I thought, oh, it'd be great to get Dean back down there to see how things have evolved in the last 2 years. So it just kind of came together very organically, and it was kind of a ragtag group of guys who really didn't know each other at all.
Who are you calling ragtag?
And from, you know, different perspectives theologically, but the thing that brought us all together was our faith in Christ and our desire to do something to help the poor gain access to a better life. And it was just, it was probably the funnest trip I've ever been on. There was a lot of laughter at many people's expense. We were all the butt of a few jokes from time to time. And
Tom more than others.
it was just a blast. So I'm excited to have these guys in the studio and share a little bit about their experience. So I think what we need to do now is dial in Richie. Richie was planning to be here in the studio with us today, but because of the snow that's falling outside, and
pansy.
at least we can have him in by the phone.
Okay. Rob, are you rolling up there? Okay. Brad, Richie, and Paul, thanks for joining us. Richie's just dialed in from outside, so we've got him via landline. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Absolutely.
Hey, our pleasure. Yep.
So tell us, you guys, about your experience in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, I've always, you know, promoted and encouraged people to go on mission trips. I don't know if I'd call this a mission trip. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But I'm really so much behind people seeing what's going on outside of the borders of the United States now, just to see the need. You know, obviously we understand the spiritual needs, but there are so many physical needs out there. I mean, just even in the Dominican Republic where we were, I think you could spend the, you know, the rest of our lives down there trying to help those folks and still hardly make a dent. But I know you guys at Living Waters are really doing a fantastic job.
Hey, Richie.
Yeah.
You just called us Living Waters instead of Healing Waters.
Hey, we can airbrush that.
That's one of those Christian cliche slips.
You really weren't paying attention for 4 days, were you?
That's awesome.
Can you just edit if I say, and Healing Waters is really doing a wonderful job.
That's it
happens all the time.
Hey, Richie, how did your experience differ from what you expected as you were getting on the plane?
Truthfully, I had no idea what I was going to expect. I mean, when I had talked to Tom about going down to the Dominican Republic, I had no idea the poverty, the conditions in that country. And I really didn't have any idea what we were going to see. From the get-go, though, it was just an eye-opener like you couldn't believe. I mean, just going into Gualé to start it off was, I mean, it just slammed you up against the wall. I mean, your heart was broken. It's almost too much to put into words, you know, the ministry is powerful, and people are getting, you know, some health, help, and also that clean water, and it's amazing. It's amazing. I'm just I'm almost speechless, you know. But I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea, having never really gone on a trip like this.
Paul, you've spent a considerable amount of time traveling, as I understand, and have had some of this kind of experience in the past. Did it sort of meet? Was it what you expected?
I was more prepared probably for the poverty and some of those things, and had seen some really difficult experiences with people
with poverty. So I'd kind of had some of that and have done a fair amount of work with kind of mission churches in urban areas in the States. And so, you know, I guess the poor people part, I was pretty aware that it would be like that. And so it was, I think, part of that made it easier for me to focus on some of the happy and joyful experiences, especially starting off in Gwale with the pastor who is an extremely powerful man and with a real vision for what it takes to be church and to provide community leadership in a community like Gwale that's really, really poverty-stricken. So that was a real encouragement right off to see that he is establishing and has established his church as the centerpiece of that community. And Brad has a song about sitting on a hill, and that's kind of the type of idea that it's just a beacon for that community, and that he has a good understanding not just of the spiritual needs of his community, but the physical and emotional needs also. And it was great for me to see that that Healing Waters can work off of what they're already doing in their community, to build on that with providing maybe the most vital physical need, which is good water for the folks to drink. Another part of that, the trip to Gwale, that encouraged me, I worry some about kind of the poverty sightseers, you know, like the going through it like we're sightseeing, looking at the Eiffel Tower or whatever, but we're actually looking at, oh, those poor people and this and that. And I felt a little uncomfortable about that happening. And one of the great parts as we walked through the area where they live, was that the people were very pleased to kind of show off what they had and to, you know, would point out which child was theirs that was playing, or one fella had been walking down this pretty slippery path through these real tin shacks, you know, kind of makeshift tin shacks that these folks live in a very difficult area. And he had been walking with us and talking to me the whole time, not realizing that I had no idea what he was saying, because I speak very little Spanish, and especially not near enough to catch up with how fast he was talking to me. And we got to kind of the end of the path, and he pushed me kind of on the shoulder and tapped me and said, mi casa, mi casa, and showed me his house, which made me feel so much better about the experience, and allowed me to just kind of take it in a way that was really powerful for me. And that day was very powerful.
You know, one of the things I failed to mention in the introductions is that while Paul is the lead singer of Reverend Leon's Revival and goes by his alter ego, Reverend Leon, when he's singing, the reason he's called Reverend Leon is because Paul is a pastor of a church here in Denver. And Richie, in addition to being a rock and roll legend, is also a pastor of a church in Broomfield, Colorado, near Boulder. Richie, can you share with us kind of how we met with a lot of pastors on this trip? Did you have, you know, was that part of the experience for you, is seeing, and this is a question for you too, Paul, seeing what other pastors, what it's like to do ministry in an environment like the Dominican Republic? Did you kind of connect with any of the pastors or have thoughts about what would it be like for me if this was my church and this was my community?
I didn't get a chance to really speak to too many of the pastors, but I certainly related to Pastor Ramon as you know, really putting his faith into practice in his life. I mean, there was no talk there without the walk. I mean, his walk was strong. He was committed. I mean, even the things that we read about him, and it just goes to show, man, he just said, here I am, Lord, use me. And he was there on the front I mean, he is definitely on the front lines of all kinds of spiritual activity and spiritual warfare. And, you know, he's someone that we really need to keep in prayer. Needless to say, you know, some of the other pastors, I think other than maybe Pastor Antonio up in La Vega, you know, they have it a little bit different in their communities. But those two communities were similar to me in just the poverty stricken conditions that they were living in.
Right.
And those guys, you know, they're living there, they're walking the walk, and it's oh man, it's not an easy life, I know.
I was inspired by the four pastors, and I think probably more than any other part of the trip for me that was the most inspirational and life-giving. I learned a lot by watching them, to see that they were able to focus on the spiritual, the faith community that they had there, that there was their people, but then also all four of them were able to really communicate to that faith community that the larger community, that their neighborhood and that their town, their village, was their people also. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, Guale, which I've already talked about, the pastor there, and then we had La Hermana. Is that the right name?
Mm-hmm.
La Hermana, where the pastor has a large church that it seems to be very mixed economically. There's obviously a middle class that's there, and I don't know, you know, I didn't meet everybody in his church.
It's kind of the Dominican equivalent of a mega church.
Yeah, but a Dominican equivalent.
Yeah.
And I was impressed. I got to talk to some of the kids that go to the school there and had a great time. One of the funny parts was talking about Earl Boykins and Carmelo Anthony. They knew as much about the Nuggets as I do, and I watch every game. And that was really neat, but the way that church on that very busy corner is a hub. And in speaking with their pastor at lunch, he talked about the vision for his church, and a lot of it has to do with social service needs for the larger community, not about building his church, but about his church serving their people, mm-hmm. the people of God that surround them. And also the idea that he wants to establish a university there. He's very careful about it not being a Bible college or a Pentecostal college, but being a college that offers religion as one of the subjects and one of the majors, but that gives the people in his community the opportunity at higher education. I really admired that. Mm-hmm. And then the next pastor that we met was not just because he's an 82-year-old man with a 40-year-old wife. I admired that. Kind of told my wife that I admired that. She didn't find that as amusing as I did. But he was this, it really reminded me, I grew up in Denver, but my family, my mom's family are cotton farmers in Texas. And the folks there in this rural village really reminded me of the people that I'm around, my West Texas family. And there was just this sense of being part of their community instantly.
Hmm.
And that was driven by the pastor. What's his name?
Benjamin.
Is that the...
Yeah.
And one of the things that was so great about it was that he came in late. He's holding a hard hat. You know, he's sweating. He comes in. He welcomes us all to his house. We're eating at his house. He gives everybody hugs. And then as he's standing there with you, he has his arm around you, and he would rest his head on your shoulder as a real... familial sense of community and of humanity, of the body of Christ, of all those things. But then you walk through the village, and he is the leader of that community. Hmm. He is the person that people go to for everything. And the reason he had the hard hat is because this 82-year-old, 81-year-old man was trying to create extra space for a cistern to go in for the Healing Waters project, and he was jackhammering stuff, and while we were talking about it, he was picking up a wheelbarrow that Tom couldn't have moved. So it was really, I found that very, very inspirational. And then later that day, we went to church in La Vega, and they have four pastors there, all of which
were very impressive. Antonio is the lead pastor and leads in a way that lets the other folks there exercise their gifts, and really the church was very informal. It was a beautiful place to be, and once again, it was like this small village didn't have a central square, but that church was the central square. That was the city park for that neighborhood.
Brad, you spent a fair amount of time in the Latin countries, I know. How did this experience square with some of your past experiences?
I think first and foremost, you know, I mean, poverty is poverty and people are people anywhere in the world. And there's just so many universal truths that you find in impoverished communities. And the more time I spend there, the more I see right beyond the kind of the veil of sadness and into this just rich, beautiful community. I mean, I experience community in, you know, in Guale and in various places that we traveled up in the mountains, you know, like in ways that I don't experience in my own neighborhood. You know, like I don't know my neighbors. And I just love the opportunity to walk around. And, you know, I felt like it was more biblical to me. Jesus and the disciples walking to get from point A to point B and fostering community everywhere they went. And the praying and the parables and the, you know, the lessons and the questions and the whole experience is communal, as opposed to here in the States. I think we all have our own little islands that we work from. So I really enjoyed, I enjoyed the communities that we visited, and I felt like we were a really balanced and unique community with a couple of journalists and four musicians from all walks of life and a couple of the Dominicans that work for Healing Waters down there, and, you know, Aaron and Josh and Tom, and then Ed as a board member. And it was just a really rich experience, lots of us with lots of different perspectives. And I think what I get the most excited about is that God's a God of story. You know, like he speaks so much through the living word, and each one of us comes back from an experience with a completely unique perspective. And Jason is writing on Relevant Magazine, you know, or on the website, and Dean's going to end up writing articles that will be published somewhere, and, you know, Brett's doing the same, and Paul's doing the same, and then I've got, you know, through my websites and writing songs, and then we've got lots of pictures that tell so many stories, and that's how the Lord works. You know, like all of us are guys up on a hilltop trying to tell about this experience and encourage people to come along. So it's awesome.
Before we stepped into the studio here, you shared an interesting perspective on Western poverty and our perception of Western poverty versus maybe a different take on that. Can you share that with the listeners?
Well, I think the very first time I experienced extreme poverty, it is just like you can't process it. It's really hard to know how to be there and to sponge it up, and it takes a little while to get beyond it. But once you're able to see the people and the dignity and the joy, it's incredible. And once you see the community that exists, even in a trash dump, I mean, I've spent a lot of time in a trash dump in Nicaragua working with a community there, and it is a beautiful community. The first time in, it's like, you're crying, and the smell, all of your senses are overwhelmed, and you can't get there. And then slowly but surely the Lord opens your eyes and you can get to the people and understand that the struggle is the same. But the community that you experienced there was so rich that we kind of come in thinking we're going to fix it or rescue them into our world. And I've experienced more poverty in wealth here than I've ever experienced in the actual poverty there. So our communities to me feel like the saddest and most barren places on earth compared to people who are willing to share anything that they practically don't have to share. So it's a pretty intense perspective shift.
You know, when I came home, my wife always asked me, so what were the highlights of the trip? And the first thing that came into my mind was, I don't know that I've laughed that hard in a long, long time. There were so many fun moments. And what really blew me away was just how much fun we all had together, and the bond that was created between this group of guys that really didn't know each other at all. And I know we can't share all of the stories, but you have a funny one? Richie, can you do you have a story that sticks out in your mind as one of the funny things that happened on the trip?
Funny things. I have to think about that. I'm trying to think here. Maybe I think Paul could probably elaborate better on it, but it was, Brad, I'm sure he wants to get back up there to La Romana.
Amen.
Maybe Paul could just elaborate on what I mean, because give the story,
We don't have to tell that.
No,
one.
That's a great story.
No, we don't really.
Yeah, we do.
No, really.
Well, we got to La Romana, and then after we looked at the Healing Waters site, and they showed us those things, and we looked around the church some, and that's where I talked to I was talking to those two boys about the Nuggets and things like that. We went to the treasurer, right, or the book. What's his?
Yeah, he's like the bookkeeper for the water.
He's the bookkeeper for the water project, and I think he's the bookkeeper for the church also there.
Yeah.
And we went to his home to eat. And there, one thing too is that the hospitality and the graciousness of the Dominican people that hosted us was a beautiful thing, and mm-hmm. and I think I learned a lot about that too. But we get there, and we have our prayer, and then we go in to get our plate, and there was one of the women that was helping to serve the meal was a single 20 to 25 year old beautiful woman, and all of us,
Brenda,
yeah, all of us recognized this, but all of us also are sorry old married men for recognizing this beautiful woman. But we did vicariously have Brad along, conveniently, and Tom had taken upon himself to kind of speak what none of us had spoken by saying, "Boy, Brad, I think this is the one. I can feel the chemistry in the air. It's electric." You know, he's saying all these things, and then Brad's confirming this by, "Oh, yep, she's beautiful. Wow, I'm feeling it too."
I was nodding. I was nodding.
It too. I'm telling the story. I'm feeling it too. I'm feeling it too. So then, in the midst of this, Brenda turns to Tom and says, "Go ahead and take your plate. There's plenty right there." In very plain English, more plainly than any English we've spoken so far in this CD. And
oops.
I said, "How do you say busted in Spanish?" And it was quite a great time. But Brad's going back to the Dominican Republic.
Tom's line was my favorite, though. Tom went, "Oh, so you speak wonderful English."
Yeah, you speak English so well. Yes. That was a funny moment.
I kept nodding. I mean, just...
Well, you guys are great to join us today. We sure appreciate you being with us. Richie, thanks for dialing in.
Hey, thanks for letting me be a part of this little conversation. And most of all, Tom, thanks for letting me be a part of the trip. And I'm just looking forward to the next one. I'm going to see what I can do to put the next one together for you.
Great. Well, it was really great having you on the trip, Richie. And I wish you were here with us now, because we're going to see if we can persuade Brad and Paul to end our CD with a little bit of music. But
oh man, they'll do a fine job, I know.
Thanks for calling in, Richie.
Hey, God bless you guys, man.
Thanks, right, Richie.
Take care.
See you, buddy.
Dios te bendiga.
Well, let's say thank you to some people.
Well, first of all, thanks to you guys for going down on the trip with us.
Thanks.
We talked about the launch of our...
Ooh. If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and dial again.
You want to keep that instead of the thank yous.
We talked about the launch of our project in Guatemala, and we've got Guatemala up and running. But I can't end this without saying thanks to everyone at Compassion International for their help in getting us started. Compassion is partnering with us so that we can start our program in Guatemala, and they've given us a big grant to do that. So thank you so much. It's just been a great privilege and pleasure to work with the people of Compassion. And also I want to just say thank you to all of you listening out there. Like other ministries, I think we had a tough year in 2005, probably partly related to the tsunami and the hurricane, with people diverting giving to other things. And we ran in the red for a lot of 2005, even into December, but we ended the year in the black, and just feel very, very grateful to all of you who've continued to support the work that we're doing. That's all I got to say, so go ahead and do your thing, Brian.
All right, well, let's turn it over to the musicians in the room.
All right. Paul and I were talking about a song that seemed appropriate to close out this with. And
I had the words, too, also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, we practiced it a lot down there. I had an experience walking, doing one of our community walks, where I found a family in their yard and just grabbed my guitar and went and asked if I could play a song for them. And I sang Amazing Grace, and they smiled. And as soon as I finished, they asked if they could sing it back to me, and they sang it in French. And I've taken just enough French in high school and college to realize it wasn't Spanish. And they're a Haitian family, and it was the head pastor of some Haitian churches. So it's amazing how a song can bring people together regardless of the language. So this is Amazing Grace in Pig Latin.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see.
'Twas grace that taught my heart to feel, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear, the hour I first
many dangers, toils, and snares I have already come. 'Tis grace hath brought me safe thus far, and grace shall lead me home.
When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, days to sing God's praise, and when we first